Okay. Well, we are going to be starting on part two today. We finished up part one. And I sent out the topics for part three. You got them? Okay.
This is your copy.
This is the next one.
Is that the next one? Does anybody need a copy?
I think the next one.
How'd you get that? Oh, you printed
it. My husband printed it.
You're so good about that. I get in trouble if I use any paper.
I sent out the part threes. Did you get your part three? Did you get your part three questions?
Isn't this where we are?
That's what part two, yeah.
Yeah.
But I sent out yesterday the part threes.
Oh, I didn't copy because I thought that was down the road.
I didn't print it out. It is, but
yeah,
you got
but
it
I
there?
Got it.
Okay.
You got
right.
time.
Okay.
He just wanted to know if you were an overachiever.
Okay, part two. Chapter five.
Book study humor.
See, in this chapter, Teresa is speaking about another kind of rapture, where the Lord raises up the soul through a flight of the Spirit. Did we begin this last time?
We're on page two.
6, 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
Yeah. 5, 6, 7-1.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay, now we know where we are. I forgot where we were. Okay, Teresa speaks of the courage one must have, a courage granted by God, and how the soul receiving this gift looks back at itself and sees how little it deserves in comparison to its obligation to God, and how the little it does is full of faults, and since it has nothing with which to pay for this grace, it begs for the pity and mercy God has always had towards sinners. So Teresa, as she progresses through this thing, she keeps coming back to this basic same thing. We owe God so much for what he's done for us, and we can do so little in return for that. And it's true. And so she feels kind of bad about not being able to do more, and so she tries to find ways to do more. And basically, you can do the most by just doing his will, whatever his will is for you, you know?
You know what I read? I think it was last night in Divine Intimacy by the Carmelite priest.
Yeah.
It was saying that we can offer up the sufferings in the Passion of Jesus as our own. We can incorporate like ours to his and then offer up. And so we have something to offer up also because Jesus is our brother and he came for us. So what he did, we can offer up also as a sacrifice to the Father.
Yeah, well, that happens every Mass, right?
Our participation in the suffering.
We're
united to his sufferings.
So we participate in his sufferings by offering ours to him.
Yeah.
And because his only had one purpose, he uses our suffering for the redemption of other people. Mm. And that's really a beautiful thing. Mm. And people waste that because when they start suffering, all they look for is relief. Mm. And some even commit suicide because they don't want to suffer.
Yeah.
Instead of offering that suffering up and helping somebody else go through their conversion process.
Mm. Remember, this week, though, that more people join death with dignity. Not so much because of the pain, but because they don't want to be a burden on the family. Where was it?
Yeah, it was on TV,
It's growing so quickly. So that we need to make people aware that they're not a burden.
So be a burden on your family, right? Is that the lesson?
It's like the devil using that logic to make it seem good. That's what he always does.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's with everything, though.
Yeah.
Changes that might come to the church.
Yeah.
All of it is with a partly of, isn't this good? We're blessed.
Well, that's one of the things we covered in philosophy in college. Nobody ever does anything that they, where they don't see a good in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? If I shoot somebody, I say, well, I don't want that person around me anymore, so that's a good, so I'm going to shoot him. I'm going to rob a bank because it's a good thing to have all that money. Mm-hmm. There's always a perceived good, even if it's an evil thing.
There's a little baby that just died in England, mm-hmm.
yeah.
that they fought to have
life
support continued, yeah. and the Catholic Church said, send the baby to the Italian hospital,
right.
which is Bambini Jesus,
yeah.
it's like baby Jesus yeah. hospital.
Yeah.
And the court said no, and they yeah. said, we're going to stop the life support
yeah.
immediately. I'm like, just imagine if that was in the United States, we'd be like fighting. I'm like,
maybe not
maybe
anymore,
not with
the way
that's
going.
Yeah.
Well, imagine,
so that family just
imagine that judge standing before God in judgment,
yes.
you know?
And then, you know, one of the lines is, it's in the best interest of this baby. I'm like,
but
yeah.
Jesus
How?
Said, forgive them.
Yeah.
They know not what
right.
they're doing. They're telling themselves it's okay for this
yeah.
and that reason.
Because
so that's why we have
suffering.
Purgatory.
Yeah.
So they
yeah.
don't have to go to hell.
Well, maybe
yes,
hell.
But, you know, really and truly, I'm
yeah.
not in connection with the baby, but life support, you know, if you never put on it,
mm-hmm.
then you don't have to make that decision.
Oh, but they're always, Ivan Hurst, it always comes up. They ask you every time you go in the hospital now,
yes.
do you have that signed? And then
yeah.
it's
yeah.
a mess because everybody's different.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes, it's who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
It's just mm-hmm. a mess.
Well, I think probably, for instance, my girls who are here, I've told
yeah.
them, you know,
oh, yeah.
nothing, just let me drop.
Yeah.
But I think they would be hesitant to do that because it's the end.
And, well, that is a lot what happens. But you don't have to use extraordinary means to preserve life, but you have to use ordinary means.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
so is life support extraordinary?
Usually it's extraordinary,
yeah.
but
yeah.
not
yeah.
always. Like people come into emergency room,
yeah.
terrible accident, they
yeah.
put them on life support. Then they try to get them off as soon as possible. And they write books after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can see where a person certainly wouldn't want to be on life support if there's no hope of...
Right. But they don't think they're going to be on it for long. That's the thing. I know somebody who just had that question asked. They said, okay, if you arrest now, do you want us... to resuscitate you,
mm-hmm.
is the way it usually comes
yeah.
on. And he said, yes. So then one of the nurse practitioners, who's very Catholic, came in and said, do you realize what you're saying? You're 94. They'll probably break your ribs.
Yes.
You're
going to
get pneumonia again.
Right.
You've got it throughout. He said, oh, no, I don't want that. So he did die.
Yeah. You can fill out a form. Do not resuscitate.
Yeah, but that doesn't completely answer all the questions that come up at the end. You have to have a good, what do you call it?
Advocate.
Thank you.
Well, John's mom was in the nursing home 17 years, mentally. She was healthy. But then the body started to decline, of course, natural.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the 90s. So they fed her through a feeding tube.
And see, sometimes that's not considered an extraordinary means.
Right.
My mother laughed and carried on with her feeding tube. She didn't even know she had it because she had Alzheimer's.
Yeah. But then the body was shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
She was on it for about a year. Then the body was
if
just
you're in the dying process.
Down. So John
like the
called
Pope.
The Episcopal
mm-hmm.
priest in
mm-hmm.
Long Island, and we called the Catholic priest, and he said, no, no, no. He said, the body is shutting down.
Right.
Nothing, nothing beyond that.
Right.
They wanted to put something in the stomach and keep her
well,
going.
Well, the tube. But
yeah.
if you're in the dying process,
yes.
it's not going to help that much. But you
yeah.
have to have people who know what they're doing,
yeah.
you know, and it's
yeah.
so complex.
So he went to
death.
Court. And he got power of attorney over her or whatever. And he said, no, nothing more. Let the body
yeah.
go natural.
But they have
they
to go
to
through a process for that.
Yeah.
I remember one lady
yeah.
had everything signed.
Yeah.
Then she was dying. All her relatives came in. And I walked in. She said, they won't let me die. Nobody would, like you said, with your kids, they probably wouldn't want you. It's
well,
hard to do that.
Yeah.
Well, it is hard,
mm-hmm.
but it's the right thing.
If you can tell.
Well, on the other end of the spectrum, too, you think... Think of what pregnancy is, the mother's the life support system
yeah.
till the child's ready to go on its own.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
that's what she is. She's a life
mm-hmm.
support system for the child.
Yeah.
You know?
My father had a fever tube, and it fell out, and that was it. We were like, we're not going to go and have him put another one
because he was at the right stage.
Yeah, we're like, well, this is it.
So, back to Teresa.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
I know, this could go down.
So, Teresa, Teresa speaks of this courage that we have to have, and she's going to mention that several times through here, talking about how much courage it takes to actually go through the experiences that she goes through, because some of them are so unusual. And you get caught up in this thing, you know, and it just really overwhelms you. And if you didn't have the courage, you wouldn't be able to withstand it and go through it. And it just shows the majesty of God, how immense He is. And then she mentions several things through here that it really is kind of intriguing. When we get to the third section, she's got a thing in there about how all this happens within God, which is really kind of, you know, we talk about God being in us, but we're also in God. And that's really an interesting twist on this whole thing. But anyway, she's going through this courage thing, and she says God told her that her payment was to receive and accept all the sufferings she had undergone, that he had undergone in his passion, so that she could have them as her own to offer our Father. So she was wondering, what can I give back to God as payment?
Was that
God told her that was going to be her payment. Now, she didn't have the stigmata, but she had the sufferings, you know. She describes this in her spiritual testimonies in chapter 46. So if you have that book of hers, you can read it there. These words of our Lord to her were very consoling and gave her strength every time she considered how miserable she is.
Doesn't that sound kind of hard, how miserable she is? I'm like, wow.
Yeah. So she's thankful that she's got these things, that something that she can then offer back to God in recompense for what He's done for her. But it also means that she's growing in her understanding of what God actually did for us. We sit here and say, oh yeah, He got crucified, you know, it took a day and a half and all this kind of stuff, and you know, rah, 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 we have Easter, and then we have the resurrection and everything's cool again and all that kind of stuff. We don't really understand or really contemplate what He actually did for all of us when He was incarnate and came among us, and then when He went through His passion.
Father, the new Father at Holy Trinity gave a really good homily last week, and he said, I never even contemplated that Jesus would have done all that even if there was one person on the earth.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, why did I never even think of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Jesus said that. He told one of the visionaries that I would go through this whole thing all over again if it meant saving just one more soul. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think about that. That God loves us so much that He would do that for just one person.
I'm
not just for all of humanity.
Bible story. He leaves the 99 good ones and goes after the one that's lost.
Yeah, which no shepherd would ever do, right?
Yeah.
Because you leave the whole flock open to all the wolves. So, Teresa then once again speaks of how beneficial it is to understand how pleased our Lord is when we know ourselves so well and how everything we have received from Him. She then says, and where there is humility, courage, in my opinion, is even more necessary for this knowledge of one's own misery. So the more you understand how miserable you are compared to God, the more courage you need to continue going toward Him. Because you think about it, you know, you're compared to Him, you're kind of miserable. And she was a lot less miserable than a lot of other people on earth, obviously. But you're this miserable person, and you start walking toward Him, and He's so much greater than you are, and you're comparing yourself, you start understanding yourself, and when you realize how much of a crumb bum you are compared to Him, it does take courage to keep walking toward Him. Because you say, I want to be like you, I want to imitate you.
But how do we teach our kids that are committing how many suicides every minute, every hour now?
Yeah.
And when you read
how do we get that to them?
And you read that, you know, we're supposed to be joyful. So I think you almost need like a detached thing to think, you know. Yeah. Of course, we all have these faults and we look at them and we're, you know. We also have to be joyful and thankful. So it's like a balancing thing.
Yeah. Or well, you got to remember there's a difference between happiness and joy, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think of your daughter.
Yeah.
With her granddaughter that needs more medication.
Oh, yes.
How can she think?
What she goes through, she called me last night, and she never, ever, she goes all day, and she has no schedule of her own. She doesn't. And then she, in the meantime, volunteers for the Red Cross and does the bookkeeping at church as a volunteer. And she doesn't have the normal strength after the bone marrow. But it's only the grace of God, and she knows it. I mean, she got home last night at 8 o'clock. She said, now Marissa is so bad because she's on a less dose of Mentol that she's calling me 2-3 times a day, an hour a day, going over and over and over, same thing. Mm-hmm. I said, call the doctor. Tell him the whole story. She thought it was patient confidentiality. I said, this is a matter, very urgent. You call him. You tell him everything. And they can give her, because Marissa goes into the doctor's office and says, I'm fine. Everything is fine.
So, that's a big struggle.
So I hope
a lot of people do that.
But it's the grace of God that she gets through each day. I see it. And she's not depressed. You know,
not.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's sorrow in her heart must be unbearable.
Yeah.
But she gets through it. Yeah.
So in section 7, so she's going through all this about what can I give back to God for what he's done for me. Then in section 7, she begins to describe in some detail this rapture of the Spirit she's talking about. She says, it is such that the Spirit truly seems to go forth from the body. On the other hand, it's clear that this person is not dead. At least he cannot say whether for some moments he was in the body or not. It seems to him that he was entirely in another region, different from this in which we live, where there is shown another light, so different from Earth's light, that if he were to spend his whole life trying to imagine that light along with other things, he'd be unable to do so. It happens that within an instant, so many things together are taught him that if he were to work for many years with his imagination and mind in order to systematize them, he wouldn't be able to do so, not with even 1,000th part of one of them. This is not an intellectual but an imaginative vision, for the eyes of the soul see much better than do we with bodily eyes here on earth. And without words, understanding of some things is given. I mean that if a person sees some saints, he knows them as well as if he had often spoken with them. And so she's trying to give you an idea of what's happening with this rapture that she's going through. It's kind of like an out-of-body experience. The soul seems to be separate from the body, but you're not really sure. So there's a lot of uncertainty in her minds as to, hey, what's going on here? I don't understand what's happening to me right now. It might be kind of like what Padre Pio did with his bilocation, you know, where he would appear to different people in different places, even though he never left his monastery. But he seemed to have more control over that than she did with this, because people would pray to him and he would know it and he'd go visit them. But here she's talking about something that's very different. And we saw it, like we talked last week about Paul's letter, where he said he was caught up into the third heaven. But he was taught things that he cannot speak. And that's another interesting thing, too.
And St. Thomas Aquinas, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so she's kind of saying the same thing here. It says, because without words, they understand some things is given. Without words, understanding of some things is given. If a person, because you didn't learn it by somebody saying words to you. It's infused knowledge. And it's great, great knowledge. It would take years to acquire. And it happens in a matter of seconds. And so once again, you see the capacity of the soul to receive this. She keeps talking about how we can never put a limit on the capacity of the soul. It's hard for us to grasp because we keep thinking our soul is something inside of our body. You know, it's all contained by our arms and legs and heads and all that kind of stuff.
Like spirit.
Yeah. But it has a capacity. So we don't really understand what she means by capacity, because it doesn't necessarily mean space. It could mean capacity to receive and understand love and knowledge and everything else.
Well, like the brain, too. They say we use what? How much of our brain? One third or whatever it is? I mean, it's sort of like there's so much more capacity in us.
Yeah. So she's finally beginning to tell us the why for this rapture. Because when something happens, you want to know why it's happening. And so she hasn't really been asking God, why are you doing this? I never saw her ask him that question, which surprised me. You know, what are you doing and why are you doing it? You know, give me some clue here, please. You know, I never saw her do that. So she said, it is to communicate knowledge to the soul. All these things that he's doing to her are to teach her about himself and about herself. And so all these different experiences are different ways that he teaches her about himself and about herself. It's to communicate knowledge to the soul. It also hints of the real meaning of the communion of saints. But Teresa says that if we see a saint, we know them very well and instantly, for we are all united in and through God. So when you see a saint in heaven, you know them as if you've known them for years. You see their essence, and you see everything about them. It's almost like they do a memory dump into your computer when you meet them, you know, if you think about it that way. It's like, here I am, so know me. So you don't just shake hands. You say, when I walk up to some person that God wants me to know, because we're all in heaven together, I know them. I know them fully.
Wow.
You know, that's really kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So I want to meet Peter. I want to know him fully. He intrigues me.
The little flower. I used to say to my husband, John, I'm going to introduce you. Because I always talked about St. Therese. He'd go, oh, not again. I'm going to introduce you to St. Therese when you get up there.
He probably already looked for her.
Yeah. I always wanted to meet Peter because he's so human. You know, and he just lays himself out to Christ all the time, just puts himself right out there, you know. And Jesus says, nope, not quite. Oh yeah, okay, you got it.
Can you imagine the discussion you and St. Peter would have?
I think we'd have a good time. I just love that man. He's just so good. He's just so honest and so straightforward, you know. Nothing hidden about him. So I hesitate to use the word teach, since to teach implies a kind of a two-way communication of transmission and reception and questioning and explaining. That's not happening here. God is, in a very short space of time, infusing knowledge of himself and of heaven into the soul with such clarity and understanding that the soul could never do this on its own, no matter how many years it may study. Once again, we have an example of the unbounded capacity of the soul to receive God, his love, understanding of his immensity and infinite love for us, and understanding of ourselves as well. Because while he's teaching us about himself, he's also teaching us more about ourselves. And the more we know about ourselves, the more we can grow, and then the more we can love.
It seems like you can't love as well without this.
You know, not as well as...
You would never get to that point.
You would never get to that point, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so he's giving you the capacity to love him more. Mm. He's not just teaching about himself. He's giving you the capacity to love him that much more than you did before, which I think is really an amazing thing when you think about it, you know? So how difficult do you think it would be for a soul after having this experience to turn away and regress?
I wouldn't think they would.
Right. No.
I think it'd be very hard.
Yeah, I don't think they would.
Yeah. She's always afraid of it. She cautions against it several times through here. So she sees it as a possibility. But she also mentions in here, I forget where, that once you get to a certain point, God protects you and doesn't let the devil do anything to you. He closes off all the doors. You know, I think we talked about that last week too. And doesn't let anything come in and get you. So Teresa then explains that at other times, along with things seen by the eyes of the soul, by an intellectual vision, other things are represented, especially a multitude of angels with their Lord. And without seeing anything with the eyes of the body or the soul, through an admirable knowledge, I will not be able to explain. There is represented what I'm saying and many other things not meant to be spoken of. I always wondered what those other things meant not to be spoken of are, you know?
But we had an organist at a church in Florida who was a convert, and he said he was playing the organ, and it was at the Sanctus, and he got distracted by something, and when he looked up, he saw all the angels praising God.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wow. Young guy.
That's amazing.
Wow. Aren't they supposed to always be there at every Mass?
Right.
I always try to look. I'm like, why can't I see anything?
Says whether all this takes place in the body or not, I wouldn't know. At least I wouldn't swear that the soul is in the body or that the body is without the soul. So she's not sure how this is all happening.
Yeah.
Does it happen while the soul is still in the body, or does the soul have to kind of escape for a little while to receive all this kind of stuff? Probably not. But it's just such a new experience for her when she's writing about it that it doesn't... She doesn't really understand what's going on fully or how it's happening. All she knows is that she's learning so much about God and about herself and about heaven, and that infused knowledge is just, it really kind of just amazing. So from what Teresa said so far, do you think this experience takes place within the soul someplace other than in the body? Or does it take place in the soul within the body?
In the body.
Yeah.
But, you know, your soul is what it is. Your body changes. But as your body ages and changes and gets hurt, it doesn't change the soul. The soul is.
Yeah. The soul's
the
mind.
The soul is you.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas your body is whatever.
Yeah, covering.
Yeah.
And at the resurrection, you're going to get a new body.
And we'll be 33.
33, that's what the nun said.
My dearest friend was a Carmelite Orvalite, and she died at 97. My dearest friend used to call it in the nursing home, and she would, for the last 5 years, she would say, "I pray Jesus will come." Well, she died peacefully, very devoted to the Blessed Mother. Dreamt to her last night, first time ever. She's only dead maybe 6 months. She looked so beautiful and so young that I said, "Marie?" I could hardly see the resemblance.
In a dream.
Mm-hmm. In a dream. And John was with her. I dreamt of my husband. And he looked young. I said, "What's my son?"
My sister saw my dad, and she said he looked really young.
Isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that amazing how many people have that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. So 6591, this section is very rich. Using the analogy of the sun and its rays, Teresa says, so the soul and the spirit, which are one, could be like the sun and its rays. Thus, while the soul remains in its place, the superior part rises above it. In a word, I don't know what I'm saying. What is true is that with the speed of a ball shot from an arquebus, the arquebus was the first shoulder-fired weapon. The musket was a heavier version with a greater caliber. I did a little research on the word there. I didn't know what it was. When fire is applied, an interior flight is experienced. I don't know what else to call it, which, though noiseless, is so clearly a movement that it cannot be the work of the imagination. While the spirit is far outside itself from all it can understand, great things are shown it. when it is again within itself, the benefits of the experience are remarkable, and it has little esteem for the things of earth when compared to what it saw during the rapture. From then on, its life on earth is very painful, and it doesn't see anything good in those things that used to seem good to it.
I can get that. Just look at our world. Just imagine you go and God shows you like heaven or something. And then you come back and you're like at 7-Eleven or something.
Yeah.
You're like,
And there's somebody robbing the store.
Yeah.
Well, it also makes you wonder what it's going to be like when, you know, Jesus said they're going to recreate heaven and earth.
Yeah.
So what is that going to be like?
I hope it doesn't look like Israel.
Yeah. Well, it has to be a physical thing because our bodies are physical, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be a physical place for the body.
Yeah. I never understood, like, the lion will lay down with the lamb. And then, I don't know, somewhere I heard it, and you're thinking, all the animals are going to get along. And, you know, they're not going to have that.
Nice, yeah. Like in the garden, maybe, of Eden.
Yeah.
They all got along.
Yeah. They all got along.
So the lions will eat hay?
Yeah. I don't know.
The lions will eat hay, right?
Yeah, what would the lions, what do they eat then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's diet people that say, you know, you got to eat what's in the Garden of Eden. But then later, you know, there was no meat. And then later on, when did we get meat? I don't know. Not Adam.
Well, God was the first one to kill an animal.
Yeah.
Because when Adam and Eve sinned and they put on their little oak leaves and stuff, you know, it says they lose fig leaves.
Yeah,
I've had fig trees. You don't want fig leaves around you because they will itch. You will be itching like crazy if you have fig leaves. And God understood this, and so he gave them animal skins for their clothes. So he was the first one to kill an animal.
Showed the way
to clothe them. Yeah.
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 So.
Interesting.
So he had to do that because they sinned. So Teresa discusses the distinction between the soul and the spirit in chapter 7, and in Spiritual Testimonies, chapter 59, and in her life, chapter 20. It might be worth reading the Spiritual Testimonies and her life, those chapters, just to get a more rounded view of where, of what she thinks of as the difference between the spirit and the soul. And I couldn't help recalling what St. Thomas Aquinas said after he wrote his Summa Theologica. He apparently had a similar experience and afterward put aside all his writings and said they were like a dung heap compared to what he now understood.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
So he must have had an experience like this himself.
Yeah.
You know? Teresa says that apparently God desires to show the soul something of the future land that it will inhabit. Because she says he shows her heaven. But maybe it's the heaven that we will have after the resurrection. Not necessarily what the heaven is now. I don't know. That's just a thought. She says that apparently God desires to show the soul something of the future land it will inhabit. So that it can suffer the trials of this life, knowing where it will go to enter its destined life in heaven, sharing in the divine life of the Trinity. She then says of the effect of this experience that even though something that passes so quickly will not seem to you very beneficial, the blessings left in the soul are so great that only the person who has this experience will be able to understand its value. So even though it happens very, very quickly, and you get all this infused knowledge in a very short period of time, the benefit of that is immense.
And if people have gotten this infused knowledge, how come we don't have like these books that say something that just is just, you know, so wonderful or so changing of the world?
Good question.
You know, we want that.
Maybe because God never told him to write it down.
Not.
Yeah.
I mean, she's trying to here, but sometimes it's hard to explain this stuff in words. You know, St. Paul said, he went to third heaven and he saw things and learned things that he could not put into words.
And St. Thomas put aside all his writings.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's not possible.
Yeah. Could you say St. Faustina? That was infused. I mean, to a degree, God came to her and taught her all about his mercy.
Yeah.
You know? It's infused.
Right.
I mean, I think that's God.
I'm sure there's a lot like that because, you know, besides divine mercy, there's other things that they wrote about that they thought
Bridget,
of themselves.
Didn't she? Well, those, I don't know, did she?
It's not like they thought of it themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, God's going to tell us things about himself that we never would have figured out on our own. Like, nobody would ever have figured out that mercy is the greatest attribute of God.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't told Faustina that, you know, we'd have never figured that one out.
We're so clueless.
So Teresa then assures us that this experience cannot come from the devil. So here she goes back to the devil, and she's always worried about whether something we experience comes from him or from God. And she says that this experience cannot come from the devil, this rapture that she's talking about. She says it would be impossible for the imagination or the devil to represent things that leave so much virtue, peace, calm, and improvement in the soul. Three things especially are left in it to a very sublime degree. Knowledge of the grandeur of God, because the more we see in this grandeur, the greater is our understanding. Self-knowledge and humility upon seeing that something so low in comparison with the Creator of so many grandeurs dared to offend him. And neither does the soul dare look up at him. The third, little esteem of earthly things, save for those that can be used for the service of so great a God. So those are the three things that are left that she pays a lot of attention to now. Mm-hmm. Knowledge of the grandeur of God, her self-knowledge and humility, and little esteem for earthly things, save for those that can be used for the service of so great a God. So what did Jesus tell us in the gospel? Seek first the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Make that your priority in your life. During these experiences, God, who created the universe by a simple act of his will, infuses knowledge of himself directly into the soul as a mere taste of what he has planned for those who love him. What kinds of things can we in the world so broken do to help others find God and seek to know him better? What kind of things can we do?
Get them in a Bible study, take them to a prayer group,
introduce them
to other people that they would enjoy, that have a faith.
Yeah.
Especially talking to people that don't know God and try to introduce him to them, you know, like an atheist or something, and try to get them to start thinking in a way that would lead them to accepting God.
And I think explaining to people, like in a natural way, I don't mean going around and all of a sudden standing there and I'm going to preach, but explain things, what God has done in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And tell, I mean, this is crazy. Yesterday I went to Tractor Supply and I wanted to get a couple of things. I don't know, this lovely lady in the 50s, she had gray hair, and she was so sweet. She'd come over and she was like, she worked there. And, you know, one thing led to another. I don't know how, believe me. And I started telling her about Carol's miracle in front of everybody 30 years ago. You know, how God just, Annie prayed, and she stood up and walked. And the woman's listening. She says, and she said, God can do everything. She says, And I said, well, that's why she was cured, because the daughter is really, you know. And we talked and we talked, and she says, This is so uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's all done naturally, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she was a believer, so it wasn't that she was, you know, but I think sharing.
It was affirming.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know.
There was a priest that used to do healing masses up in Maryland, and he had a twin brother that was also a priest, Puerto Rican, I think. And this friend of mine, Greg Sovich, and I used to go up to his healing masses quite often, and we'd act as catchers because when people would come up to get prayed over, they'd fake. Now, some people faked it because they wanted to make out they did, but some people for real. So we'd stand behind people, and when they passed out and fell down, we'd catch him, you know, and just lay him on the ground. Mm-hmm. And he used to do a healing thing for people that had, like, a physical thing. Mm-hmm. And he healed some little girls mm-hmm. That had cancer and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And one day that we were there, and he puts all the people that are sick in the first pew, then he goes down the row, mm-hmm. you know, praying over them and stuff. Yeah. And he went over to this little boy, and he started to put his hands on him, and he jumped back. And he tried again, and he jumped back. And he turned to the mother, who was sitting next to him. He said, "How long has it been since you went to confession?" And she told him, "A long time, you know." He said, "I can't do anything for him until I clean your soul." So he took her over to the confessional, heard her confession, brought her back, and then prayed over the little boy.
Great.
I mean, it's almost like talking to Padre Pio, you know? I mean, it's just, there are some priests that just have this gift, and it's just an amazing gift that they can see people like that and then just do things. But those are the kind of things that, you know, like now somebody else who might have been there who would see something like that, that might be enough to trigger them to just start, you know, getting closer to God.
I sometimes think you need, like, I don't want this to happen, though, but, like, you know, the news says an asteroid's going to wipe out Earth. Mm-hmm. Don't you think a lot of people would turn to God then?
Yeah.
Well, like, and maybe we might get back on the road, and then they say, "Oh, no, the asteroid's not going to hit." But then we got some people back.
Yeah.
Well, like 9/11 had that effect for a little while.
Yeah. And we can also pray for people too. You know, if you got relatives or friends that don't go to church or have left the church or whatever, you pray for them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You never know what your prayer might do for them.
Yeah.
You never know. So Teresa finishes this chapter by comparing these gifts given to the soul to jewels that a spouse gives to his betrothed. She says these gifts can be lost through one's own most serious fault. But then she says, but the spouse who gives them has the power to give the grace not to lose them. And so he can give you a gift, and he can also keep you from losing that gift. Because he wants you to use that gift. And that's another thing. When he gives you a gift like this, he doesn't just want you to hoard it. He wants you to use it. You know? He wants you to whenever he gives you a gift, if a gift comes from God, he wants you to use that gift. Oftentimes to help other people as well as yourself. And so you ought to think about, you know, how can I best use the gift that he gives us? And so that takes us to chapter 6, which we'll start next week. Because it's close to quitting time now, so.
Okay, yeah.
We shall, I don't want to start a new chapter with only a couple of minutes left to go, so we'll stop here. Okay. Anybody have any final thoughts before we close for the day?
This is so deep.
Yeah, and it gets deeper as we go through.
Like, I don't want to say beyond,
lot
I mean, it's really.
Yeah, it's very deep.
Beyond.
Yeah. And it really makes you think, because when you look at what she says, and you start thinking about it, and thinking about, well, you know, think of what God can do to a soul that loves him. Because everything hinges on love. Everything. And what God can do to a soul that loves him is just absolutely mind-boggling. Because you're sharing it with him. He is love. Because the more love you have, the more of him you have in you. So it's just really like an amazing thing. So, have a good day, everybody. See you next week. Have a blessed week.
How's Mary Beth?
She's doing fine. She's doing. She had a rough weekend, a rough couple of days, because she had her last infusion of the bad stuff last Wednesday. She spent most of the weekend in either in the bed or in the recliner.
Yeah.
But she's starting to eat better.
Thank God.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
What is next week?
Time goes so fast.
Oh, it does.
Doesn't it? Oh, dear God. Before you know it.
Yeah.